Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everybody. It is the Red Men Originals podcast with me, Paul Machen, alongside Chris Pajak, Steve Plunkett, and Steve Hall. I put slightly too much intonation on your saying it. Steve Hall.
What
do
you call it? You know, like a collection of Steves. You're like, you got a head of
a
cow.
Four of Steve's.
No, I was thinking like Stee guy, maybe, like fungus, maybe. I don't know if that's too kind.
Well, they called you the Stees earlier.
Two Stees in a pod.
I like that. That's good. That. Good.
Yeah.
Stee Squared, I think someone mentioned when we done a watch along once. Stee Squared, I quite enjoyed Stee Squared.
Totally stolen from Radio X, which I listened to for the first time, I think, after having had Toby Tallant on the show last week. Best nicknames you've ever heard?
For anyone?
Just in general, yeah. Anyone's ever had a
There's that clip, the guy walks with a limp, it's called The Sniper's Nightmare. Because if you had him in your sights and he's got a limp, you'd be like, that, trying to get him, wouldn't you?
Right.
When you have to explain it.
Yeah.
I used to like One Size Fit All. That was one of the classics, wasn't it? That
one
was a good
size
one. Fit All, who played for Crystal Palace, his nickname was One Size.
One Size Fit Whore. And I was like, yeah.
I used to get like loads of whore jokes, obviously.
Yeah, that's
and there's the one with the guy, he's got one eye, and his name's Keith, so they call him Keith.
They're good bloke band nicknames.
That's on Lad Bible, lad. There's a good section of Lad Bible on these.
Bus Stop Eyes. One here, one round the corner.
I was saying, Paul had last week, we got called Mortgage Eyes, one fixed, one variable. A little bit of a swizzle, I like, yeah.
Right, okay.
that didn't go on plan. Yeah. How did that go on Radio X?
Well, it's Johnny Balls are probably worse.
Did you have any nicknames?
We'll stop that.
Not myself. No.
The best one I ever had, and it was only a very select group of people. I had Hollywood for a while as a goalkeeper from Hollywood Saves, and I had randomly, which makes me sound like a massive twat, I said anyway, because I liked it, was a genius, was a one random one. And you know why? Not because I'm clever, because that's obviously not the case. It was because
it was
the
Little John thing, was it?
The Little John thing. Oh, ironic, yeah. It was because I happened to know that Noel Gallagher had done a cover of To Be Someone, which is a Paul Weller song, and that was literally a reason but for enough to that nickname.
You're such a stoner, you and your mates, lad.
no further comments. There are plenty of further comments to take place. Liverpool won an away game, an away win, 6-1 over Leeds United. Holy Jesus and shitballs. Chris Pajak, you talked about how you managed to survive 5 weeks without a Liverpool win. You didn't do it. You lost your smile in the process. It's just
that
floating around.
That
1-6
is now quite a thing, isn't it? Because obviously we've put 16% on the website on merch for 24 hours. But
why
also
did we add 16% on?
Oh, we should have done. But also, I think we've got 16 points away from home now as well in our 16 games away from home this season.
Very good.
So there you go.
Nice. It's a 16% discount, by the way, on redmanmerch.com till 9:30
Wednesday morning.
Yeah, the code's away win, all one word.
Get in. Steve Plunkett, how are you feeling? You did the final away show this morning.
Yeah, it's really good.
So I walked in as you finished, we walked out like, oh, that was very good. That was very pleasant.
It's been a while since three blokes walked out of that studio with massive smiles on their faces. There's so much to speak about. Did a really good section on Trent, so go and check that out and his new role and stuff. So, yeah, mate, really, really good conversation and really nice to talk about a good win and an away win at that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We've just been at that point where it's become gallows humour around the office, isn't it, Steve? Like, oh, well, Liverpool are shit, we'll lose this, ha, 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 ha. And unfortunately, it's stopped being like a joke and it started to be a bit more seriousness has crept into it in the last couple of weeks because, yeah, you know, pinning your hopes on Liverpool winning away games has been a bit of a hand to nothing this season.
Yeah, it's the fourth win. And it was ironic, wasn't it? Because I was saying this yesterday because speaking to a few of the Everton supporters next door, obviously, and they were saying, like, oh, you could do us a real big favour. And I was like, if we were playing someone above us away from home, I think we're better at that. The only three we had were Villa and Newcastle Spurs. It was everybody else away from home. We couldn't win. So to go to a relegation team, a threatened team, and absolutely wipe the floor with them, it was hugely positive. And like you say, it almost become a... Not even like I say, at first it was a bit of banter, was it a bit of a meme, oh, Liverpool can't win away. It's like, oh my God, Liverpool are crap away. Like, we really are rubbish. Our away form was just absolutely dreadful. And that's so unlike Liverpool, really. Just in general, since Jürgen's got here, I've always felt we were a bit like in your face, we'll come to your ground, we'll beat you, we'll do what it takes to get something away from you.
We're always up for a fight.
Yeah, like aggressive. And I used to think early on, you can go to Anfield and park a bus, you might get something. That changed, obviously, when we become brilliant. But I used to always fancy us going away to someone else's ground where they could want to come on to you and beat them. And then it got to a point where teams were even parking buses against us at home, their home game, when we go away. And we were like, all right, we'll do that. And then all of a sudden, teams started playing against us, and we were like, oh my God, we can't cope. Like, we go to Brentford and Brighton and all these places, and even Forest a little bit, get out fought and out played for us to go there to Leeds. And like I say, it was, and it was a good time to play them because they're fucking rubbish. There's something about that manager that Jürgen Klopp's got his number. He's one of, you know, I think it was like 19 goals against this side now or something. Absolutely mad. But
that was the first this side scored against us, I believe, last night.
Yeah, it was the first time one of his sides, yeah, because he was at Watford, wasn't he, when we gave them a beating. But given the fact that they'd gotten battered by Palace, I was expecting a bit of a reaction. I was thinking, it's Elland Road on a Monday and they've just been battered and they know they're in a relegation battle. A couple of results have gone all right for them over the weekend in terms of rivals. It's going to be fierce, and to be honest, I think from the start, Liverpool controlled it. Well, they did. Liverpool battered them. It kept breaking down when it got to Diogo Jota for half an hour. But once that kind of got sorted, we were completely dominant.
Once someone like switched him from pass the ball to their players to pass the ball to our players on his back, you know, like from good to evil switch on the crusty doll. It was like, right, Sad, yeah, this will work a little bit better for us.
Wearing red Diogo. I knew I had something.
That's it. Why did you say that?
Yeah. As soon as that happened, again, it was almost perfect performance, really.
We're up to the heady heights of 10th in the away table.
Great, isn't it?
From 13th last week.
I think, are we 10th on goal difference, though? We're level with quite a few teams, aren't
we?
We're
level on points in the away
table.
Palace
and Chelsea.
Palace, Chelsea and Brentford.
The lofty heights of Palace.
In form, Crystal Palace.
Madness.
Back-to-back wins.
Three on the bounce.
Back-to-back-to-back.
Good on him. No, it's just nice to get a win. Everyone, literally, the sun is shining, the weather is sweet, and Liverpool have won a game. And there's loads of good things to talk about as well. We're trying to pick the small wins, the small positives, the small things that bring you joy in football matches when the result can't.
I've hated you doing that as well. I'm joking.
but it's nice not to have to stretch. Yeah, no, you're all right. Life's bad enough. This is escapism. Unfortunately, not in its best form at the moment. But we'll talk about Trent in a minute. But all across the board, it was nice to see the win. I love that clip that Sky had from last night of when we're pressing, like we pressed in like a five-man pack in the 93rd minute or whatever.
Jürgen has an orgasm.
And Jürgen basically goes, oh God, oh God, oh, slides down in his chair. As of when Harry met Sally moments on the touchline, Chris. And that, it was, you mentioned it actually, Jordan, commentary on the watch along last night. It was just almost everything that was missing from it. It was hunger. It was a hunger that's been absent in later stages of football matches this season.
It was, and it's night and day to what we've seen, isn't it? Not just away from home, but sometimes at home this season. I think, you know, if you'd have asked me, well, you did ask me actually after about the first 15 minutes what the score was going to be, and I was a bit like, 1-0 Liverpool, thinking probably in my head, this has got 0-0 wrote all over it if it carries on the way it's going. Like, I mean, Leeds had probably had the best chance from a free kick. And Liverpool weren't really up to much, but once it clicked in the attacking sense, once the movement started and everyone started to trust each other and they were showing that desire in the middle of the park to win the ball back and everyone wanted to impress in the new formation, it felt like everyone on the pitch wanted to show Jürgen what they've learnt this week in school,
yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and it's because that's what they've had. They've had a full week of training and they want to go out there and go, this is how much I've learnt. This is how much I've taken on board. This is how hard I'm working for you.
Yeah.
This is what I've worked on, what we've worked on collectively and what we're going to do. And the performance from, you know, 15 minutes in to the end of the game was up there with some of the best performances we've had this season.
It's about buy-in, isn't it, Steve? You know, it's about players understanding that if they put the work in, they're going to get the just rewards. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of happened. And it was mentioned on Monday Night Footy, but you've now got Diaz coming on the pitch and you've got Darwin Nunes coming on the pitch and you've got Roberto Firmino coming on the pitch. That's the first time we've ever been able to do that. Yeah, absolutely. But
no,
I mean, in terms of the front line, you know, we've had so many injuries this season. Lads have had to go and play extra minutes where they wouldn't normally have had to do. And we've brought Gakpo in halfway through the season as well. And now there's a real hunger for places. We could have the conversation. We'll talk about Jota and we'll talk about Curtis Jones as well. But there were question marks over why is Jota playing instead of Darwin Nunes. Well, it meant that we got that Diogo Jota gets a goal, and that's two goals and an assist, and then Darwin comes on the pitch desperate to prove himself and bags a goal as well.
Yeah, it's good man management, and we've long said we've got the best five or six in European football, and there's not many that would argue because you don't normally have five or six of that quality. So we're able to mix it and switch it and horses for courses type scenario, and I think a lot of people have questioned potentially why he's gone as long as he has playing Jota, but he wants him to recover his form. And it was like someone found a switch on him yesterday. And the moment he nicked that ball back and set off and created the goal, it was like he remembered all the things that Diogo Jota does well for Liverpool, all the things that we've come to love. It's been a tough year for him. He's probably battered his own head over this. That's what centre forwards do. But the options are amazing. And like you quite rightly say, you know, he's on the pitch and he's playing, and there's two guys on the bench that can play left side of that front three, and Diaz and Nunes. And it's kind of, if there's ever anything that's going to make you look across to the bench and think, I need to sort myself out because I'm having an indifferent 25 minutes. I need to get back in the races because I might not come out for the second half. Mm-hmm. That's how it was.
Yeah.
Then he's really a look at himself and improved, and he's got his goals and he's got his assists. There's other things in his game that came back to some degree.
You know, there's the thing. I was saying this last night to Dan on the Instant Match Reaction. The biggest difference is the questions were asked, why is he starting over Darwin Nunes? And the simple answer is he wins the ball back on the halfway and sets up a goal. For the second Salah goal, the fifth goal, he wins the ball back on the edge of our box. And if you can honestly tell me Darwin Nunes is going to do that for us, I think you might be wrong.
Yeah.
That's why he started over Darwin Nunes, because he's going to work like that to get the ball back.
And Jürgen has got a history, Steve H, of trusting players. And I mean, like, putting trust in them. What we've had this season is we've had to put trust in players because we've had no one else. So we've had to go, I need you guys to go out there and do the business. And often this season, they haven't been able to deliver. Now, he's turning around and Thiago's fit and Darwin Nunes is fit. So it's not a case of Curtis Jones and Diogo Jota not playing because we've got no choice. Well, what a confidence boost for them. Like, no, you're keeping out our most expensive centre-forward signing of all time. You're keeping out one of the best midfielders on the planet. Yeah, I'm not that. I'm going with you guys. And both of them, ultimately, it was a harder climb for Diogo Jota in the game. But both of them come out. And if both of them end up starting against Forest at the weekend, they've fully earned the right to do that.
I always think Jürgen's, it's a very odd thing to do, because the conventional wisdom is someone's playing bad, you just drop them.
Yeah.
He very rarely drops plays. He kind of plays them back into form. He's like, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he
Lovren's the best example of that.
And what he'll do, he'll hook you after an hour only I'll hook you at 45. He usually goes, right, do it again. We'll keep playing and playing until you get better. Because if you drop Jota for five games, you'll need him in six. And you're looking at a Diogo Jota on the bench who's just gone. You killed him. By just dropping him in, and you can always take him out. Like Steve says, if he'd have continued that first half performance, he wouldn't have come out for the second half. He was shocking. But that you can do that. If he's on the bench already, it's a different thing. And I've always thought that Jürgen did it. He went through a spell doing it with Chamberlain where I was like, I can't believe he's playing again. And lo and behold, he got out and he scored a couple of goals. It was the AFCON time when both Salah and Mane were away. So he has got history of doing that kind of thing. And I still don't. I don't know. Jürgen knows yet what he wants to do up front. He knows Mo Salah's going to play, and I don't. I think everything else, it's still very much up in the air. What he wants to do when everyone's fit and fine.
And Gakpo's forced his hand. Agreed.
I think he should have, but I don't know if he definitely has. I wouldn't be shocked if it's Jota and Diaz. You know, at some, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone. I think Mo Salah's nailed on, and the rest is up for grabs. And I think it's fair enough. My guess is a fully fit Luis Diaz would probably be nailed on as well, and then he's got other decisions to make. But it's like she said before, it's such a luxury to have. We've got six of them till the end of the season. Whether they go and replace with Firmino or not, touch wood, you go into next season with at least five just absolute worldies potentially, I think, if they're all fit and firing. And I also think, Paul, I might be wrong on this, I don't think he's given up the ghost of top four, because why would you? He might as well win every game. But if you're looking at this is a dry run, we're doing a new system, sort of a little style of play, whatever you do it, why not play Jota and Jones and see if they can do it? Because you need to know the answer. Yeah. You know, yes. You know Gakpo is going to be. You know Diaz is going to be here. Yes. You know Thiago. There's no issues. Let's find out. Here's five or six games. If I sell you in the summer, mate, well, you had the chance. You know,
yeah, we said exactly this on the build-up show last night, didn't we? This is like they were two where you need to know if they can do it. And best case scenario, you find you've got two lads who can come in and impact football matches for you. Medium case scenario is that you've got, you know, yeah, you can maybe move, you'll maybe move them on. And then there's another case there where it's like, well, you might raise their profile and raise the value in the short term. And then instead of having two lads who have got no confidence, who've been bombed out, and then you're like, well, do you want to give us 15 million, 20 million for these lads? You might have put like £10 million on Curtis Jones's price just from his last two performances, because all of a sudden he's shown he can do it, albeit against Leeds United, but against the top team in the Premier League and one of the bottom teams, he's shown he can cut at a Premier League level, and that's got a value.
Yeah, both of those, Jota and Curtis Jones, for me, it was about confidence, their performance last night. Jota got his confidence from winning that ball back and driving forwards and getting the assist. Kurt Jones has built up his confidence over the last two games. Kurt Jones, was it against, I can't remember who his first game was against, was it Bournemouth or something? I can't remember. The game before Arsenal, whatever that one was. He starts that one, he starts the Arsenal game, he starts this one, right, Chelsea. He doesn't try that pass, his assist in his first game back. Just doesn't try it. He plays the simple ball through to Gakpo 5 yards in front of him, breaking into space. Tonight, he's got a little bit of confidence. Three games on the bounce under Jürgen Klopp, playing this nice new position that I'm really finding I'm getting a little bit of joy with. Got a little bit more attacking to do. I can pick passes. There's the breaks are off almost. So he plays that pass, and then he looks better again because of it. And it's just about building them up little by little, and sometimes that's what you need with players. You need the belief, I think, going back to the system change, that this is going to work. I think one of the problems Jürgen might have had this season, I stress the word might here because it's completely unfounded, but when you've changed a few times, we've tried Diamond, we've tried 4-4-2, we've tried 4-2-3-1, etc., etc., the players might lose belief in what you're trying, because you're telling me that this is going to be the next thing and it didn't work. And then the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. This is something the teams have stuck with them, and they're like, do you know what? We believe now. Halfway into that first half, they believed. They could understand how it was going to work, how we were going to attack Leeds, how we were going to get the better of Leeds United. So it's belief in a system and belief in each individual player is sort of part of that system. Kurt Jones, for me, was freed, you know, the last couple of games, because he's not having to think about the harder side of things, the thing that doesn't come naturally to him. He's in an area of the pitch where he wants to play and he's comfortable playing, and he's doing it differently to how maybe your Gundogan would do it on that left-hand side, who's sort of running in between the right back and the right-sided centre-half. He's allowed to go around the outside. Shock, that's where he played. Like, you know what I mean? That's what he was doing when he was growing up. So he's entering into an area of the pitch where he's really good and he's comfortable. And Jordan Henderson, the goal against Arsenal where he runs in and flicks the ball onto Mo, is it? That's the Gundogan style. It's the opposite side of the pitch where someone's just running into the box, but Hendo's able to do that around the outside as well. Everything just seems to be that this position, he might not be the best at it, he might not be the long term at it, but it suits what he wants to do and what he's capable of doing. And Jota's the same, really.
He's just coming for Curtis Jones. He's just had a horrible, horrible time with injuries. And I've said this a couple of times, last couple of weeks on this show, of like, I get thinking that he's not of the level to be like a world star. I mean, because that's, you may as well say that for every footballer, and you'd probably be right, because very few actually truly make it to that sort of level. But it's the people who are nasty with their criticism of him, like, you know what I mean, and writing them off, and it's like waste their time and energy apropos of nothing. And that is to say, with no provocation whatsoever, we'll just take to social media and go, such and such, he's shit, and he's not good enough, and he's championship level, and he's blah, blah, blah. It's like, I'm sorry, but you don't know. You genuinely don't know. And if you're going to err on the side of what's gone before, he's made 80-odd appearances for Liverpool in the best Liverpool team, certainly the Premier League era, and comparable to the greatest Liverpool teams of all time. Mm. And that should count for something, but in a lot of people's minds, it doesn't. He's a great example of just sometimes you just, it's a bit of a Bill Hicks ism, but just shut up and watch him play. Just shut up and let him get on with it. If he's not good enough, he'll get moved on. But if he keeps sticking around, we had this with Henderson. Like, the amount of managers who kept Jordan Henderson around and kept giving him increasing importance in the team, and yet you still had the same people going, no, he's crap, not good enough to play for Liverpool. And then ultimately he proves, and again, different, you know, Curtis Jones might never get anywhere near to touching the levels that Jordan Henderson reach. But we've had enough examples in recent years of just watch and see and shut up. If someone's genuinely shit, there's genuinely nothing to be gained from slaughtering individual footballers and being horrible about it.
You're absolutely spot on. You need squad players, ultimately. I might look at Curtis Jones and go, right now, I don't think he's good enough right now to be a centre midfielder in a team that wins the league. That is my view right now. That can change, obviously. But is he better than, and I just Googled him because I wasn't 100% sure of his name, is he better than Luke Chadwick, who stuck around at Manchester United for 5 years and won league titles as a squad player? Or insert however many of those Manchester United players you didn't think were that good, but were able to come in and do a job for them to win league titles? Probably is better than those players, to be honest with you. And that's like the levels thing, isn't it? He can be a good squad option for us. And if he's versatile as well, and he's kind of proven that, then Jürgen will be happy with him. You know, and doesn't mean he doesn't need to go out and spend 30, 40, 50 million pounds, because Kerr can become that 30, 40, 50 million pound player if he's not that already.
And you look at successful teams in history, look at the great Brazilian sides, they're Dunga, the European Brazilian, they tagged him, did the water carrier, Didier Deschamps, who are not as good as they were. There were players around them that grabbed the highlights because they were like generational players of ridiculous talent. You can't necessarily have 11 players of that nature. You need depth, you need a squad. There's no reason why getting fit, get over the niggles, get rid of the silly injuries that he picks up. He proved last night when he comes in, the drop-off isn't huge. And it will always be a horses for courses situation with Curtis Jones. You probably wouldn't give him the freedom that he had last night, say, against Arsenal or Man City or Chelsea, but we knew we would get that against Leeds. So no problem at all. I've kind of been on the fence with him. Is he or isn't he? Good enough to be at the club. He's 22 years old. He's played 80 games for Liverpool. How many 22-year-olds play 80 games in an elite European club of the stature and the magnitude of Liverpool? So it's about time we just back off and let him do his thing and see where he gets to.
It's an overused thing, seriously, but if he was playing for any of the other Champions League teams on the continent at that age with that many appearances, and we were linked with him in the summer, there's a lot of us who'd be quickly Googling, you know what I mean, finding YouTube highlight reels and probably pairing over some of the things that he's done.
I think he's not going to drag Liverpool over a line, but I think when Liverpool are playing well, he can drop in and fit. Yeah. You know, if that, does that make sense? Yeah, like, yeah. I don't think he's like I said.
The same as Oxlade-Chamberlain, yeah, but Oxlade-Chamberlain's 28.
And that's what I'm saying, which is fine. Listen, again, squad thing. If Liverpool are going to win the league title, I don't think Curtis Jones starts 30 games. At this moment, it might change, he might develop, but if Liverpool are playing well, and, you know, he played against Chelsea that game when, you know, we were, confidence wasn't great away from home. We were in a bit of a lull, and you could sense that a little bit. And then against Arsenal first half, we were just absolutely shocking. But then when Liverpool start playing well, Curtis Jones plays well, if that makes sense. Mm. That's the conundrum. At some point in his development, if he wants to be a regular starter at Liverpool, he needs to play well regardless of what's going on around him.
Yeah.
At the moment in time, he still needs other people around him to be doing bits and bobs. But what I would say is that
that for most young players, by
the way. Yeah, he's 22. I'm not. This isn't a massive slagging him off. What I'm saying is, he's not Trent. He's not that level of player. Trent's going to be a world-class footballer, where Trent can have a good game and Liverpool can still be shite, or vice versa, whatever. But speaking of Alexander-Arnold, going on to it, the fact that now Curtis Jones has got two defenders behind him in midfield and then three other people back there, it's essentially a 5-on-5. He doesn't have to worry too much. I think what Chris was saying before, I don't want to give the ball away here, because all Jürgen said in every press conference, we're so easy to counter against. We give the ball. And then if you're in the field, you're thinking, fucking hell, I can't get the ball away. Yeah. Because with all due respect, the lad who's the air at the minute, his legs have fell off. Mm-hmm. And behind him isn't exactly perfect either at the moment in time. So you don't play that, you don't try that risky pass, those little flicks. I felt I thought the same with Jordan Henderson a little bit. They were trying a few more things. Maybe they had that confidence of, right, well, at least if we give it away, yeah, I've got Trent and I've got Fabinho in my field and I've got three lads back there, we can get away with it a little bit more. So I think the freedom of the last couple of games has really helped Curtis Jones. He's a very attack-minded player. You mentioned before about confidence. I don't think he lacks for confidence, really, in sense of, if anything, he's got that arrogance that I love. You know what I mean? He thinks he should be in the team every week. He thinks, because of football, Thiago, I want to play. And I love that about him. But I think in terms of, the understanding of the team, I always felt like he was wrestling with himself. He was trying to be Genie Wijnaldum, because I've seen Genie Wijnaldum do this, and that's what Jürgen wants me to be. And I don't think he's ever going to be that. But if Liverpool are going to be a more attack-minded team with a back door that's solid, then he's absolutely fine. He'll do well.
He's what? 6'1". He's got pace. He doesn't lose possession of the football. And, in a very broad sense, we've had years of going, Curtis Jones doesn't lose the ball. He does. But you know what I mean? He's just in mad circumstances where young footballers lose their heads and just do something stupid, boot it out for throw-ins or wild to kick it away. He'll take that extra touch, beat someone and maintain possession. His close control is great. He's got an eye for goal. And as we saw last night, he's got vision and creativity. In fact, it's not even a pre-assist against Arsenal, is it? But it's the pass that unlocks Arsenal for the goal that sends Andy Robertson to do the bravery to hold onto the ball, to do a little shuffle. Yeah, exactly. The little kind of reverse back heel kind of shuffle thing. And then that assist for Diogo Jota, it's perfect. That's a wonderful
thing. I told the pass, right? I think the best part of that thing yesterday was when that Firpo comes to time, snap his leg. If you're watching, he comes in with a straight leg and Jones just pops it round him with a shovel of almost, he scoops it round him, and then it's not noticed, but his second touch with his left foot, it's just that natural dribbling ability. Yeah. I know you took a lot of stick by saying the McManaman thing a while ago. Mm-hmm. It is that ability to shift it from left onto his right foot very quickly. We saw Jota struggle with that a couple of times. We were on counter-attacks, and it was on Jota's left and he was trying to get it across, and it took a bit long. What Curtis, he's really good at that, shifting it onto his right foot to get away what he needs to do. I thought the pass is excellent, but I thought the way he scoops the ball around and then gets into position and uses that frame, like you say, to hold the fella
and
off, really strong.
The confidence not to just roll it 3 yards in front of Gakpo and let him do the running, or just to pop it to Salah, who then becomes the guy in the position to either run in down a blind alley, because we've seen Salah do that plenty of times in that situation, or tries to take someone on, or is the guy who then plays the pass. He's like, I don't need these guys, I'll go and do it myself, and that's confidence.
He's a confident carrier of a football. Yeah, when was the last time we had a genuine centre midfielder that first thought was to get the ball out of his feet and drive into space?
Should be fucking Naby Keita. That's the thing.
That was what we signed him for. It's what he did in the Bundesliga, but seemed to leave it there when he came over.
This is the thing. He's lost a year of his career because of injuries. He goes back to last winter mid-season last year when he gets the eye injury, and then that he really struggles to get back in the team and then this muscle bone growth thing that he's got at the minute. He'd have started games this season, he'd have been in the first team plans from minute one of the season, because if nothing else, because the other lads were injured. Because when we've had
that's also, not to be harsh on him, but that's also why he's got 80 games for Liverpool, because of Liverpool's recruitment, and not having the midfielders. But that can work both ways, can't it? It
depends on whether you want to treat that as a negative. Do you recruit? Do you not recruit because it's bad?
My point sort of more that, that's when you come into a side, sometimes, certainly this season when you're not playing well, it's easy to look around and see other players doing things and kind of just copy them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what Kurt's playing in the middle of the park has kind of done. He's played that safe option, that safe pass, because that's what the senior professionals are doing. When he's come in earlier on, when Liverpool were playing brilliantly and everyone's full of zip and it's all over the place, Kurt's happy to do all that. He's cracking at that, loves to beat a man, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got to remember sometimes, just because he's been here a long time, not to judge him like he's a professional who's played at the top for 5 years. He is still under 100 appearances as a young player, and he's young enough. Yeah. And he's going to improve if he plays games of football, and we'll find out his level. He's nowhere near it. That's the difference between him and Ox.
Yeah.
I know Ox ain't getting no better. Yeah. There's a long way Kerr could go.
He will have, if it hadn't been, I mean, this season, I think he'd probably be at least on 100 appearances. You know what I mean? If he'd had a little bit more luck this season with injuries.
Milner should have probably 30 to 40 less appearances for Liverpool at this stage, and a lot of them would have been eaten up by Kurt Jones had he been available.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I don't want to do too much more focus on that, but it's good to encourage. Like, it just is what it is at this point. It goes just on your point about the recruitment thing. This is it. Is Liverpool clearly see something in him? And maybe, you know, maybe this is, as I say, is a look where they just want to double check. They want to double down, right? Let's have one last really clear look at him, make a decision for the summer, because he does need game time. Is he good enough to get the game time at Liverpool? Well, we're going to find out. And on the balance of what I'm seeing in the last couple of games, why wouldn't you keep him around? He's a local lad, he's a Liverpool fan. He fills your homegrown, quoted in the best possible way, because he's come through your academy as well. And if your point is spot on, Steve, as long as there's no significant drop-off, that's mission, that's entry level. That's a good starting ground. That's a starting place to build from. You want footballers to come in and not harm what you're trying to do across the board. If then they add on top of that, then you've got yourself a really, really good footballer. Just on the Jota thing, I want to talk to Trent now, but I just had a quick look into, he's been back. He's made 10 appearances in the Premier League since coming back from the calf injury. He's got 2 goals and 3 assists in that time. So, and obviously last night we'll skew that because 2 of the goals and 1 of the assists comes in that. But all of a sudden, 5 goal contributions in 10 appearances, having had a very, very serious injury. Again, just leans towards, is a guy who's turning the corner and starting to make himself useful again.
He feels like a confidence player to me. He feels like he's going to get you a glut of goals, because that's what he did.
Yeah.
And I then think, it's going to be a little bit of a drought and then a glut of goals.
Since the day we signed him, we first watched him, I was like, this lad's incredible. I think he's brilliant. I think he is in our best team going forward. I think if a fully fit and firing Jota, I think is a huge asset. It's just, I don't know if it's been psychological, because he's had a couple of bad injuries, and I don't know how much he enjoys legging around the left wing a little bit, but he felt like he enjoyed it more against Leeds than he had done in the past. I think he's definitely one you stick with, and you play. I saw rumours like sell him, and so I was like, what? Mad. Like, unless he really fancies getting off, that's crazy for me. He's brilliant.
It's a situation with him, sorry for interrupting, situation with him where, outside of goals and assists, which we've seen and you've just referenced, if he's not doing those things, people will look at him and say, well, what's he giving you? Yeah. Because he's different to all the other forwards. The goal against Everton last year was an instinctive wallop, bang, top corner. None of the other forwards would have taken that effort there. They'd have cut it back for somebody else. He's a little bit different. He scores his second goal by the thing that we spoke about a lot. He stops his run on the edge of the box. Everyone else carries on and suddenly he's in space and he gets a shot off and scores. If he's not doing those things, then certain elements of our fan base will look at him and go, well, actually, what is he doing? But like Chris says, I think he's a confidence player. We talk of Gomez being a confidence player. Some guys need a run of games to get back into form. Really good timing last night to come back into form with what we've got in front of us and what we're trying to achieve. And he'll play a big part in that, because he'll go into training today and he'll be buoyed by what's gone on last night, and hopefully we benefit from that.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Absolutely. Liam Bento with the super chat while we were chatting there, just on a different player altogether in the midfield, says, how does Fabinho pick up as many yellow cards as he does 9, but never manages to get a second yellow/red card? Is that discipline, form/fitness issue? And then
sometimes it's luck.
Darkfield says he's a DM. It's literally his job. The best DMs have that, don't they, Chris? They have the ability to play on the edge of a yellow card.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a few situations over the last sort of 8 weeks where I think he probably should have been sent off a couple of times, to be honest, because he's been just really badly late on challenges. When he's at his absolute peak, you take a yellow card when you know you're going to take a yellow card. Don't think that's the same quite at the moment with him. He's taking a yellow card because he's late into challenges, and that's the difference.
Yeah.
Hence, these points of his legs have literally fallen off. So
he's still a worry. But I think that he's not for the best. Fabinho was getting himself booked when he had to.
Yeah.
This Fabinho's
back here.
This Fabinho's not doing that. This
the yellow card is part of your armoury, isn't it?
Yeah, because you used to see it. He used to just laugh at it. And now he's doing the whole. Usually it's a sound, because he used to drag someone back off, boot them, and then just walk back into his position. Now he's kind of like, oh shit, I was half a yard there. And we even saw a little bit of that yesterday, I thought, with him. I think he's massively being benefited by having Alcantara next to him. But like, we're all talking about these midfielders. I don't want to go off too off tangent really, but like, Liverpool need to buy someone who can play DM.
Yeah,
badly. Whether it's Gravenberch, who are no can doer as well, but like Fabinho, you saw what lads getting played back into form. I'm not sure you can play someone into form when the legs might have fell off.
Okie dokie. Elite Six sends a super chat in saying, great show all. Glad Jota proved me wrong last night. Also, I can't wait till Nunes learns to speak English so I can hear and be as sexy as well as see it. The ultimate Darwin Nunes thirst account that is Elite Six. Dropping
big
a
fan of
Elite
Six.
Big fan.
Elite Six.
Let's talk Trent.
Mate.
Cara described him, said only Kevin De Bruyne is a better passer. And I thought it was an interesting thing, Chris, where Trent's been hung out to dry all season, probably by Fabinho not being able to cover him. So he's decided to go and cover Fabinho instead. Just solve everyone's problems.
The interesting thing for me came from Jürgen's post-match, where he used the word stability a couple of times, didn't he? And how you build confidence off the back of stability, and how Jürgen's belief is defending is the only way you can gain stability. So yeah, Jamie Carragher asked him the question, you know, did you move him there to get him on the ball, or did you move him there to make it a little bit better defensively? And Jürgen was like, a bit of both. But I think what it came down to was he wanted the stability at the base of the team. And what Steve said before, I think, is that 5-on-5 is where they were sort of going with it. But it's interesting, because whenever anyone's really spoken about him as a midfielder, it's never been a 6. Although I've always felt he's probably most suited to playing the Xabi Alonso-esque 6 rather than the Makélélé-esque 6. It's always been more as the 8. It's been alluded to. And I didn't think it really suited him, but you've put him in there and he's got a position on the field where he can see everything.
Yeah.
You know, I was basically at a bin that underpants I was wearing last night. Just the fucking scanning, you know, around the field and stuff. And you know what I realised after the game, Paul, is that why it stood out so much to me is I've never seen Trent do it before. because he's not in a position on the field where he needs to have his head on a swivel. Yeah. He just doesn't need to do any of that.
Just wave it to the other Kenny. Yeah.
He can see Robbo. He can see everyone else. He just plays those balls.
He's like, he goes, looks at, hiya, Hendo. Look right. Hey, nice shirt, mate.
I'll sign that later.
Even if you're
a sad
bauble, you're like, laddie.
Mo's a laddie who wants your shirt. He's got some cardboard.
So that's kind of it for me, is just that understanding of where he is on the field. You can see he's painting that picture in his head all the time. He's got, as Jamie quite rightly says, maybe there's only one better passer of the ball. I'm not sure about that. We'll see in the fullness of time whether Trent's on the same level or as Kevin De Bruyne or not. Right now, Kevin De Bruyne's ahead of him in that category, but I don't think it'll be for very long if he's playing in that position. He's got all the attributes to do it and do it well. In fact, towards the end of the game, Paul, Fabinho was stood like a spare prick at a wedding. In the middle of the park, off to the left in the Thiago position, admiring Trent's footwork and handiwork and everything else, because he was just like, oh shit, lad's been doing it for fucking 90 minutes plus 45, and he's miles better than me. I've been doing all my life.
Yeah, we've just found the thing where it accentuates his positives and hides his negatives a little bit. That's all we've done. You know, he's still playing right back in a sense of when we haven't got the ball, he would be there. So he's not, people say move Trent to midfield, he's not really doing that. Because I agree, I'm not sure, as part of a three-man midfield, I'm not sure he could, where he would fit.
I think he could play a six if it was a different six.
Yeah, if he's played, he could do the six a bit like when you're playing against someone shite.
Pirlo or Gerrard in his latter years, just or like as I mentioned, Xabi Alonso, Jorginho's the modern-day version. There are different types of six, but it wouldn't be Liverpool six the way we could.
Well, he's not Liverpool six who's just there to let the full-backs go. He's too good for that. I think it's interesting that, I think it helps that Ibu's playing. Mm. I know, God, I mean, goal aside.
But that formation doesn't work with anyone else.
I think maybe Gomez got a bit of pace, but it's whether he's physical enough. It works. I know, again, he shit the bed yesterday, but you'll forgive him that one a little bit for that. But Liverpool have just found, I think what they've decided to do, I think at the start of the season, and you might disagree with me, Chris, on this one, because I know you're into the tactics a bit more than I do sometimes, but like, it felt like our team was built around Darwin Nunes, and it was like, Sally out of the way, and we'll do this, and Darwin's the man. And then throughout the course of the season, everything's changed. That team yesterday just looks like it's built around Trent Alexander-Arnold. Yes. It was just built for him to go and flourish. And that's, why not? Because he is genuinely brilliant. Going, right, Trent, you do this. You 150 touches the ball. If Trent's on the ball 150 times, something good's going to come over eventually. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to just knock it sideways
just
150 times.
Your energy crisis. If you're midfield, it solves your passion crisis, your desire crisis. You know, I've talked about once, I wanted someone in the midfield who desperately wants the football, who wants it back and wants to go and get it as well. And you don't really think of Trent as that. But actually, when look at where our first goal comes from, he doesn't complete the pass. It's a nice idea, but it doesn't come off. But then he's on the front foot, he's trying to win it back. And obviously, he gets lucky with it, he does. But he was doing that against Arsenal as well. Front foot, aggressive, wants to be everywhere, wants to make things happen for us, and we just haven't. None of our other midfielders have got the legs to do that. Trent's 24 years old. He didn't get the minutes at the World Cup. He's not getting picked for England, so he's not being run into the ground. He's got a point to prove, and you know what? He's actually being put into a position on the pitch where he can prove the point, as opposed to, you know, you're not going to answer. He's never going to answer his defensive critics as a fullback ever. Ever, 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 because they're now ingrained in people. People will be wrong, as they have been, because he's an absolutely fine defender. But because all it takes is one winger to go past you, and wingers do that all the time. So you put him into an area of the field where he gets to grab the game. And honestly, we said this 2 years ago, it was two Stevie-esque performances for me back-to-back, where he's clearly been chomping at the bit to try and help Liverpool. And you can't, because every time he's tried to help Liverpool, he's left a big gaping hole behind him, and he's been exploited, and then he's getting called a twat by everyone around football, and that's doing him down. Now it does build a team around Trent, because he looks ready to be the main man for the football club.
I agree with Chris's point on he's more of a six than an eight. If you look at his defensive statistics, interceptions is probably his greatest attribute. And as a six, you can stop the line-breaking passes and you can get hold of the football. What I saw yesterday was a lad who had every single pass in his locker, was happy to use every single pass in his locker, would pop the ball off and take someone coming in on him late at times. They were a bit late to arrive, trying to knock him out of his stride. And for over an hour, he absolutely controlled the game. I don't remember the last time a Liverpool centre midfielder gave us a performance where everyone in the team just looked to give him the ball. Stevie Gerrard is the name that comes to mind. Very different from a Gerrard position in that he brought more of the team into play. He used everybody. He went back to Ibu if he needed to. He went to Ali sometimes across to the left-hand side. He's got, all, I think this is Jamie Carragher's point, he's got all of the passes in his locker that a midfielder should ever have. Mm. And his execution of them is unbelievable.
It's Alonso-esque for me.
It is.
That style, like I mentioned before.
But much more mobile than Alonso.
That's what I'm saying. Gerrard was Alonso's legs. Well, Firmino's legs, essentially. So it was a bit different. But you are right, he can get about the pitch more than Alonso did. But in terms of, there's absolute danger if you give him 2 yards on the ball. He'll find anyone. Like whatever he needs to do. And what I liked about it, I think sometimes you can... you can feel it a little bit, like, oh, I'm having a world here. And you just go for the Hollywood style every single time. It's like, nah, sand. There was a couple of times we just rolled it into Gakpo or rolled it into Jota because it was on. And then he'll get it back and then he'll go, not everything needs to be Hollywood ball to Andy Roberts.
The best part, you're right, is those 5 yard quick passes between the midfielders and you're just taking the piss out of the other player who's running in between you and you just can't do it and you're just popping it off a little triangle.
And eventually he gets 3 yards and then he can do the, ball.
What was interesting, there was times when he had the ball, Leeds covered off his options. So they would have spoken about this, they would have watched the video from the previous game and it didn't work for them, obviously, but the manager would have said, he's got the ball, that's your man. The next biggest issue he's going to have is when teams do that properly in front of him. This is where recruitment for Liverpool becomes really important because if it's not him, it needs to be somebody else. Mm. And you can't ask Fabinho to do the same thing that Trent did yesterday. And there will come a point where teams legislate for his ability on the ball.
You're absolutely right. And this is what Arsenal did in the second half against us, because we were essentially playing the same formation for most of the game, weren't we? They had a man on each guy, and Mo Salah ends up with the most touches he's had in the Premier League all season because Henderson just tucks inside, opens that passing lane to Mo Salah, 1v1 with Gabriel, most dribble attempts, although he didn't get any dribbles past Gabriel all season. That's the other thing. It's like, well, if we're going to play central, what does that do? Well, it opens up wide, and then you've got Mo Salah to worry about.
I also think, Chris, it really helps when you're a centre forward if you know the fella on the ball can find you.
Yeah.
It's so easy. You make those runs every day. With all due respect, if there's other players, you might not fancy that
one. Look at Erling Haaland at City.
Yeah,
it's
every stupid. Yeah, get on your bike. Steven Gerrard gets the ball. The Nunes goal is Gerrard to Torres. It's that type of goal. It's one straight ball off a world-class player to a striker who does amazingly well, brings it down, touch finish. It sounds easy, but like, it's easy to make those, and that's why I think that whoever plays wide, and that's why Gakpo now will be the striker probably, or Jota, because you need someone who can come in, because Trent might just need the 5 yard pass that Steve's on about. If they're blocking the every ball, then you need to pop it to someone. But then if you've got your wingers, you can come out to win. We saw Mo Salah playing centre forward a couple of times, a little, because you go right sounds and you can make those narrow runs. It's really hard. Like Leeds, by the end of it, were a shambles. They'd felt a bit to get it, but I also understand a little bit because they were getting racked. They were giving the run around because if they sat back, which by the way they should have done, at like 3-1, they should have just called the game off because the goal difference could kill them. But they never, because they just keep knocking around us. We're going to have to go and engage. And the second you go and engage, see you later, we're in over the top time and time again. If Trent's playing there and everyone else is doing, knows exactly what they're doing, that's going to be hard for anybody to stop. Because you're fine, go and close him. As long as he's got an option of a short pass, whether it's to a Van Dijk or a Canate or to a Fabinho, just to get him out of jail, he'll be absolutely fine.
He's got things to improve, as well. He'll get better.
Games.
Exactly. But the encouraging thing, because I've seen a few of the comments, and I love how people have made their opinion upon things and are desperate to play it down. And I do agree, you need a greater sample size to truly be able to say with your full chest, this is the future of Trent Alexander-Arnold. But in fact, I want to hear from Kai Madison. You were all clown. Trent had one decent game in which he didn't have to defend against a team at the bottom of the log. Try playing like that against City and see what happens. I mean, he literally
played the top of the league team
last week and bossed the game from doing exactly the same thing. And this is what gets lost sometimes, is that we're seeing a tactical shift from the top teams.
John Stone did it against us.
Exactly, John Stone. But John Zinchenko's been doing it for them. We've mentioned it elsewhere. But like, Rico Henry does it the other way for City sometimes as well. There's a chance we've got the best one. Right now it's a chance.
Right. Is best case scenario, it works and no one can stop us and we win every game between now and the end of the season. Worst case, you're never quite sure which Trent Alexander-Arnold's turning up. Fucking hell. I mean, that's a tough thing to have to deal with, isn't it? Bloody hell, is Trent going to play there? Is he playing right back this week?
To shut him down?
How are we going to defend this? Do you have to come up with two game plans for Trent Alexander-Arnold every single game? Wow. Just one thing on that, on Trent as well. The big difference I saw from him, and it's something you touched on, Steve Plunkett, earlier, is he looked like a leader. Mm-hmm. Now, people have always talked about Trent as a captain. I've never really seen it. In fact, I've seen him as a talisman. I've seen him as a maestro. I've seen him as for what he is, as a footballer. I've never really seen him as a leader. In fact, it's difficult to do from fullback, but Robbo's always stood a little bit ahead of him in terms of leadership. Well, Robbo's got the armband ahead of Trent. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, the whole team looked at Trent like a leader. And he was there 5-10 minutes in. I called it to you. Watch him. He's pointing at Fabinho, telling him where Fabinho to go. And he's running past Fabinho and he's pointing everywhere in and everywhere. And everyone all of a sudden went, bloody hell, we've got a Steven Gerrard type captain here. Don't get carried away. I don't think, you know, we're there yet. You are right. It's two games. But that's what the team looked to him like. And he looked like a fucking talisman. And I'm like, wow, that's something else. That's a big step up.
On a team full of top players, everyone wants to give the ball to Trent.
Yeah.
Every single person on the pitch wanted Trent on the ball. The defenders didn't want it, so they gave it to Trent, and the strikers are desperate for him to have it because they know they're going to get found. Robbo can't wait for him to get it because he can go sound, I can go. It just works out. It works a treat if you can. I think if I'm game planning against Liverpool now, that's really difficult to game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a comment here from one of our YouTube members who is using a character set that doesn't exist within our language, so I couldn't tell you what your username is. But they do say Trent can stay as an inverted fullback as long as we have cover for Konate at right centre.
That's the issue. We said this before, didn't we? I think was it, I don't know, we're on film at this point. Like, if Matip's playing, you might be in trouble there.
Yeah.
If Gomez has got the pace, has he got the physicality to do it? It makes sense why there was links to a Gvardiol, for example. Mm-hmm. Big, strong, quick, athletic defenders. I think you're sad. I think this might go on again. I might be completely off on this. It might be one of the reasons to why like Matip's being linked away. Because maybe if they were always planning to do this shift, because remember, start of the season, Trent was in midfield a bit more. It was just that it was a fucking disaster. But
no, it was completely different.
It was a different style.
Completely different. He's been doing it for 18 months. But he's been behind the front players. Yeah. This is completely different in terms of Trent being in the midfield.
Sorry, what I'm saying is we were asking somebody to go and to fill in for him, or we weren't, which sometimes was the problem. We were asking Jordan Henderson to and he couldn't get back there. If we're going to ask the centre-back to do it, it's going to have to be someone who can get about the pitch. And as much as I like Joel Matip, I think the question's right.
I think you're right. And in terms of recruitment, looking into the summer, we need to buy a model that's as close, or a player is as close to Konate as possible, with all the same attributes, the physicality, the size, the you know, the willingness to win the ball.
You're not for a unicorn, aren't you, a little bit?
Well, there are other physical big centre-halves out there with pace. You just mentioned one yourself, but we're not going to spend £100 million on the centre-back, are we? There will be other options out there, and it will help us with the situation that where we are right now.
Do you mean you don't think it's Seth Vandenberg?
Oh, I forgot about him.
Listen, I'm not going to get into
thanks
it.
For that. You there, didn't you? But what I'm trying to say is if you want to do it, you want to do it every game, or you want to think of do it more often than not, you need to make sure that your third centre-back...
So it's more likely to be him than Nat Phillips, just to clear.
Yeah,
Well,
good point. You need someone of a similar physical stature to Konate.
He's a defender with pace.
Well, not... And physically strong as well. That's one thing. That's where Gomez would let. I think that's my concern with Gomez. Gomez will be able to get there. It's whether he can body someone he gets there. Because
I think Gomez can against wingers.
Yeah, yeah.
The Napoli game, the Kvaratskhelia where he shouldered him and cut the ball back. That's a concern that we've seen. That would, and I'm not.
If he can do it right back, he can do it at right centre half.
Like, so you know what's interesting is how it affects Robertson as well. Because Robertson's now, you know, talk about Trent now. Midfielder right back. Robbo's now left centre back, left back. Because he's left centre back of a three.
Yeah.
But that goal on the break, he's a marauding left back who took the absolute piss.
Interesting.
It was brilliant.
When he did that, Trent just dropped back into the right side.
Those two are going to have to really
dovetailed really well there.
And that's the thing, you know, you want to be flexible as possible. You don't want
to. Could Costas do that? Sorry to interrupt.
Possibly. I'm not sure about the centre back thing.
That's
and
the worry,
why
isn't
I think it? I think we'll go for the left sided centre half if we can, because it gives you a bit more flexibility. Because the worst thing you can do is build your team around one footballer.
Exactly.
And if Trent is the system, then you're in a world of trouble if you get an injury. Was what you want to be able to do is, we were talking about this about like Thiago. Thiago can do all the things that Trent was doing in the midfield slot, but do you want him covering it right back? Probably not so much. Jordan hasn't got the passing range, but he can do those things. There's a couple of other... So the way you mitigate that is by maybe looking on the other side of the pitch instead, and you get someone who's a bit like what City are doing with John Stones and Zinchenko and what have you in Arsenal, but that's a question for the recruitment team more than anything else. Just one last point on this, just to move it forward. I did the player rankings last night after the game, and the thing that the big takeaway for me was... The players I put either just sound is in our middle tier was Alisson, Van Dijk, Robertson, Fabinho, Henderson, and Salah above, just slightly above because he got his goals. It was all the guys who've been carrying the team for years all put in a really solid, sound 7 to 8 out of 10 performances, and it was all the fresh legs, the younger players, the ones we bought in, the ones with all the running and the desire, were the ones who all were sitting above them, broadly speaking. And it's like that was felt to me like the first time in for ages where the evolution of the team makes sense all of a sudden. And when you start to see more performances from Diaz, when he gets back fit again, that will only add to that, because all of a sudden, yeah, there's going to be five players who haven't been run into the ground by us for over a 6 or 7 year period, who have got legs, who are hungry to go and win more, and then hopefully they get to then drag the other lads along. But very, very encouraging. A bait against Leeds United, bore off. Right, short break from us. I want to get any rant from anyone, if anyone's got one on a bright, sunny post-Liverpool away win day. And then we're going to look at a couple of the transfer links, Forest, and maybe a little bit of a look at Newcastle's fixtures as well. Stay tuned.
Hey everyone, come and join us for the very first Red Men TV Liverpool quiz night live at Hotel Anfield on Friday, May the 5th. We'll be down at Hotel Anfield for an outrageous evening of Liverpool trivia, party games, amazing prizes, and incredible live music from Dave Jags of the Ragamuffins. Yes, hosted by our very own deadly duo, Mr. Chris Pajak and Mr. Paul Machen. We promise you an unforgettable Liverpool-themed night. It is the perfect precursor for the weekend's match. So if you're heading to our wonderful city for Liverpool versus Brentford, or if you're just looking somewhere to have an amazing night out with you and your mate, bring your trivia brain, bring your dancing shoes, and best of all, bring your shooting boots as well. So yeah, get your tickets now. Scan the QR code that's on the screen. If you go to ticketquarter.co.uk and just search for the Red Men TV, you can get them there as well. Or just find us on all of our social accounts and there'll be links there too. Don't delay, the tickets are going to sell out fast. There are only limited numbers as well. And best of all, if you want to get a group of your mates together, get on there. You can book tables and you'll get discount for buying as a group as well. So yeah, don't delay. Make sure you go and get them. Come and join us down at Hotel Anfield on May the 5th. It's going to be an absolute belter of a night. Make sure you're there. Go and get your tickets.
Hey, it's the Bias Football Podcast.
Grudge and respect of the week. I mean, I don't know the scoreline, but if we could play the video of the time wasting, please, in the Crystal Palace game. It was 4-5-1, wasn't it?
What game is this?
I don't know.
That looks like the play in Watford.
Okay, well, that time wasting in that game from years ago.
Get out, you are the worst at this game. You are the worst. Edited 5 weeks ago.
Let me do it again, right? So we'll just go to me. We're not going to cut this out. I said at the start of the last one that I didn't know the scoreline in the game. I will rephrase that to, I don't know the game.
What game this was from?
But
is it not Watford?
It's Watford.
I saw some time wasting, which was fantastic. I've got no idea.
Right, you're bad for this game. Dan.
Yeah, Jeff Hurst for his hat-trick in the 1966 against West Ham.
Absolutely. What a performance. Hey, welcome back to Red Men Originals. We're going to be talking about Liverpool Forest. Just touch on that, and we want to have a little look at the remaining fixtures for our other European place rivals, shall we say. We're going to do Agony Rant, which I think we've done for a couple of weeks, which is just kind of because the whole show has been that, really, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Has anyone got anything they'd like to get off their chests around Liverpool, around football, around anything at all?
Not after a win, Paul.
I know, right?
I've got a couple for the next show, but I was going to save them, so I'll hang on for them. Lad.
Okay, cool. So we're going to be doing the Bias Football podcast after this. Normally these shows are done on Mondays, but with Liverpool playing on the Monday, we've obviously moved it all to the Tuesday. We're going to do a big focus on whether Arsenal are crumbling. I don't want to hasten to use bottling because I think that's
it's good for the SEO, though. Everyone's
Yeah, it is. So we will say it, but we won't necessarily.
I didn't agree with it
that.
When it was Liverpool not winning titles on 90 odd points, and I don't really agree with it when Arsenal get like probably late 80s, 90s.
It is funny though. It's equated to like the people who go to the first wrestling event and do what, and like sing the John Cena thing and all that kind of stuff because they've watched it for years, and it's nice to be on the other side of things. So I'm happy to throw all the shade towards Arsenal if they do crumble, but we'll do that on the Bias Football podcast. Anyway, the one thing I want to touch on, I agree. After the win, I don't like to get too negative, and I was literally getting slaughtered for being too positive earlier on. So it would be out of character. The one thing I do want that really annoyed me at the weekend, and again, my angst has softened because I'm happier because Liverpool win. And I'm pleased with how people have conducted themselves. I want to point out, I thought Leeds United, the way their fans, the way the football club conducted themselves in the build-up around the Hillsborough stuff.
And Arsenal, Fulham.
Good. Well, Arsenal, we talked about Arsenal last week, didn't we?
And Fulham and Everton as well.
Yeah, but particularly Leeds, and because I don't think Leeds haven't got a great reputation, at times. And having spent years down in the lower football leagues, I don't think that lends towards making you a more cultured football fan base in some regards. But I thought the whole thing was handled brilliantly. I thought the supporters obviously got involved with it, the club tweeting about it and tweeting like, let's bring an end to tragedy chant and stuff. The one thing that really annoyed me, and I generally stayed off social media at the weekend because I didn't need to be on it, but what I didn't like, and given that we've had a lot of this, like the people who go to the game and people don't go to the game and the culture of the football club, and we talk about this getting education from the cop, I saw Liverpool content creators releasing videos on the Hillsborough anniversary day, and I just thought it was really, really tasteless. And I'm aware that sometimes, I go on in the morning, I've had this a couple of times where, because it occupies my mind quite a lot, the Hillsborough stuff, because I've said this publicly before, but like, my dad was there, we were talking about it the weekend, and he was saying, like, he doesn't class himself as a survivor because he wasn't in the Leppings Lane end, but it's a kind of thing that does kind of stay with you. But I find myself during the day, like, you'll nip onto Twitter and you'll see random other things, and you find yourself like, oh, and then you go, I've just randomly dropped a like on some fucking absolute nonsense post or whatever. Is that a bit out of keeping with it and blah, blah, blah? I'm always hyper aware of how you do on social media on that day, but I felt it was a bit fucking wild that like accounts were talking about player contracts and transfers and all that kind of stuff on that day. And it goes to show a little bit that being mindful of Liverpool is not just a football club. There's a huge culture around it and the meanings around it. People, everyone knows about Hillsborough, but there's ways of conducting themselves that need to be, that's learned behaviour. That if you're not in it and you're not in and around the city, maybe not facing up to you, that I think people need to go out of their way more to remember that there's lessons to be learned. It isn't just about learning the players and knowing the owners and knowing how Liverpool tactically set up and all that kind of stuff. There's a depth that make there's a rich tapestry of Liverpool, good and ill, that shouldn't be gotten forgotten. And it's, again, I'm not going to name names, I'm not going to slaughter people because I don't think it's fair, but it is something for I care about phrase this. I think the vast majority of people that we interact with and we've seen traveling the world supporting Liverpool, I love the fact that there's people who've never set foot in the city limits who have got total buy-in to everything around Liverpool. They learn the history, they learn the culture, they love the culture, they love the ethos of the people of Liverpool, the city of Liverpool, and therefore the football club that's around it. That is hugely important, and I I have a real fear that when Liverpool have become successful, we've had a lot of people who've joined on and see Liverpool as a quick pathway to, well, I get to have a bit of football banter and I get to see some, add to some success and jump down the throats of fans who support other teams and stuff. I think we saw the really good side of things in the last couple of days with the Leeds stuff, with the Arsenal stuff. You mentioned Fulham, Everton. And I hope that doesn't get lost. I think, you know, I think there's been a lot of criticism of local fans, I think, in the last few months when it comes to ownerships and takeovers and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, just wanted to kind of get that.
Very, very quick on the back of it. There was, again, it's Twitter, so be careful. Like, again, I did tweet a few things, but I don't think I've really spoken. A few people asked me about Liverpool. It's my anniversary. It's, you know, my wedding anniversary is that day, which is a bit of a topic within itself because of COVID. It had to be. It was the other thing. Anyway, so I was like, yeah, happy anniversary, blah, blah. But I did, a few people asked me about the footy. I was like, I'm not responding. It's not today. It's not the day. But then I did look at our account. I think Dan tweeted off the account, like, in remembrance. And Liverpool did it. And especially on the Liverpool one, there's people underneath going, like, FSG out and sign Bellingham or sign, or, you know, sell Curtis Jones. I was like, again, they're probably, and I spoke on BBC recently, a couple weeks ago, about Chadji Chanton and stuff. And it was like, I tend to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I hope it's that you're not such a knobhead. I hope it's just education.
Yeah.
And that certain things just aren't done. And I think there has to be something about that. Like, and to be fair, those people cutting that, not now, knobhead. I mean, fucking, not, this isn't the time or the place. Don't be doing it. But I think I'd like to hope it's an educational thing where, yeah, listen, that's not the time. You might hate FSG, sounds good for you, Willin. You might hate Curtis Jones. You might, I don't give a fuck who you hate. To sit, you don't, that's not, there's a time and a place. April 15th, especially on posts about that, that's not the time nor the place.
Someone said this to me. We had a lot of family around over Easter and the weeks that the days that followed and stuff, and someone said to me, I can't remember who it was, because my house has just been a constant train of people in and out, but like, is it weird and is it difficult doing like the Liverpool channel thing because of things like Hillsborough, because of the, and I said, not difficult, but it is, there are more considerations when you make content around Liverpool than I think there are for other football teams, because we've got this other days, the certain media outlets that obviously we can't go near and we wouldn't want to go near and all that kind of stuff that others don't have, you know what I mean? So there's lots of other things,
but remember going back a few years, Paul, when the safe standing stuff was started, mm-hmm. And that was a really difficult conversation for us to have, because I always felt like, look, we'll have those conversations when the right people are involved at the forefront of those conversations, and we'll take our lead from them. And I think sometimes we do that as content creators ourselves, where we go, we're not here to lead in this regard. We're waiting for somebody else to lead and the right people to lead. And what they decide, I'm okay with, because there's a respect thing there. So, yeah, and that was definitely one of those conversations. It's not really a bad one, but certainly safe standing was a thing.
No, it's right, because that's the point, is that we can all have our opinions on things, but there are certain situations where other people's opinions carry far more weight. We have to be far, and we are, and as Liverpool, we have a duty of responsibility to those kind of things as well. And it's why people get, you know, when we lean into politics sometimes, people get annoyed by it. It's trying to explain, well, it's the general political, yeah, it forms the part of who we are and the roots of the city and all that kind of thing. It's connected. It can't not be connected. And you're right, the safe standing thing was such a hot topic. I was always very much in favour of it. But, you know, ultimately it's one of them. If, you know,
Spurs to Shankly did an incredible job there. I remember going down to a meeting that they did in the Lina Hotel, and they took some survivors up to Celtic. And they went round, you know, showed them the safe standing, and one of the security officer came down from Celtic after having given some of the survivors a tour around the ground and showed them on a match day, taking them in as on a match day and giving them the tickets to go. And then they came down and spoke to us. The security officer from Celtic came down and spoke to us at a Spirit of Shankly meeting and stuff. And I was thinking, that needed doing. You know, that's the type of thing. And there was a vote, obviously, and all that type of stuff, which is the democratic way of doing it, and with Spirit of Shankly and stuff. So sometimes you just have to know that other people are better positioned to do stuff than you are.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay.
I see the point going back to the original topic, though. It's not in great taste if you aren't putting Liverpool content out on that day. Like, I can see, and I hope it's just, again, I think
it was someone
drew
attention to, someone messaged me about it.
An educational thing rather than you're being obtuse. I hope people just, again, not everyone knows everything, and that sounds, there's Someone needs to tell you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I mean. That education is key to everything, absolutely everything. You know, you can rehabilitate the vast majority of people. People are people. There's no such thing as, there's not really such a thing as true good and evil, the kind of comic book concepts, aren't they? It's just the people who have been raised certain ways or need, more, or need to have a greater understanding or empathy of a certain scenario. But that goes back. There was a dangerous attitude creeping in, I think, in, over this season of like, don't listen, like as though be the people from the city things don't matter in certain attitudes. People just treating Liverpool as a bunch of, as 11 lads who go out on the pitch. And you can consume Liverpool at all levels. It's funny, you know, again, like, I always look like my dad and my uncle. My dad has, you know, been going to Anfield for years and years. My uncle used to go with me for season tickets alongside each other. But my uncle's now the kind of guy who you'll watch it on the telly and he'll get up and pot around the house while it's on. You know, and but he'll still sit down with my dad and still have really vociferous opinions on footballers and all that kind of stuff. But like my dad was sometimes like, I watched every minute of that game. You made like five cups of tea and cooked the dinner while that was on the stuff. You're allowed to engage with Liverpool, whatever you want, but there are some things that there are lines that need to be respected that can get lost because again, we become an even bigger global entity than we ever have before. There's now so much more opportunity and space for people to create content around Liverpool, and I hope that people do remain mindful because the Hillsborough thing is the most important thing that's ever happened to Liverpool, you know, and to this city in a hugely, hugely negative way, by the way. And it needs to be respected. Moving things on, or back actually, because we've got a super chat from Alan Garza here. Says, if we move Trent to midfield next season, who would be your dream fullback replacement?
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Honestly, like
he's not playing.
He's playing both. That's the whole point of the system, isn't it? You know, he'll defend. Now, I mean, we said this morning. We had 75% of the ball last night, so 75% of the time he was in midfield. Hmm. You know, 25% of the time he was doing right back or whatever. So that's the thing, isn't it? Like, for me, it is about him being able to play the right back position when you're defending and moving into that position, just like Guardiola's been doing, just like Arteta's been doing with different players this season, creating that superiority in the middle of the pitch, which is what everybody wants, creating opportunities for our wide players. That's all made possible by Trent shifting inside, and I think it's probably less running for him than getting to the byline all the time as well, so it's certainly within his wheelhouse physically to be able to do it. Technically, there's nobody better suited than any of those sides that I've mentioned, Arsenal or Manchester City, who have got his skill set to be able to do it. So yeah, hopefully it is something that we do, and hopefully it impacts the signings that we're looking at.
I've got to be careful as well, though. Like, planning your whole team around, that's great. And obviously, you managed that.
Done it once before.
No, things are slightly cyclical. You mean, like, someone will figure out a way to stop that, and then you need something else. You know what I mean? Because it's the new thing. 4-3-3 was the thing until it wasn't, because someone realised if you do this, then that and that. Someone will figure something out, and then you'll have to keep evolving and adapting.
Yeah.
And I, to be fair, it's the first time Jürgen's ever copied something, I think, really. From like, he hasn't really ever done that before. I think he's clocked on, wow, that's working. You know, with all due respect, like, Kyle Walker can't get in the Man City side. That's how well it's working.
Yeah.
They've jibbed him off, and he's brilliant. So there's ways around it. He might. I still can't see a world in a 4-3-3 where Trent is a midfield, just a midfielder. I think in certain, I think 4-4-2 might suit him better or whatever. But
yeah, but that's now, isn't it?
He's just a brilliant player. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's now, and he's got to be in the team. So however you get him in the team, figure it out. I've got no issue if every single time Liverpool play, it's built around Alexander-Arnold doing what he needs to do. So he's that good, he's worth building the team around.
If that's your go-to, bringing you right back into midfield, game in, game out, I said it before, it's who plays with him. Because if you shut down the effectiveness of Trent, you've got to have other options. Within the midfield at the moment, Thiago aside, we don't really have other options other than a ball carrier and Jones. A couple of really good youngsters who are coming through in the three teenagers, and Jordan Henderson, who, as time goes on, will manage his minutes and we'll see less of him. So the recruitment is huge, and we'll learn a lot from the recruitment, and it might be the catalyst to not putting all your eggs in one basket and go and signing someone like Jude Bellingham, in signing two or three players that, when it's not working for Trent, they give you options.
Can I make a suggestion? Stefan Bečetić.
As the right back,
just rotate with Trent,
yeah.
Because he was brought in as a centre half.
Yeah,
he's played in both midfield positions. He can do the dirty work. He's got the vision. He's got the touch. He's not super mobile, but he's mobile enough. There you go.
Shouting it.
Transfer links just quickly. Ryan Gravenberch, very strongly linked this week. Steho, happy with that one?
Yeah. Like I say, he hasn't become a bad player at Bayern Munich. Whatever reason, hasn't worked out for him. Now, it's interesting because Bayern are pretty much saying he's not for sale, but Liverpool and his agent seem to disagree with that by talking to each other. I don't know how that works out, by the way, the Liverpool tapping him up, but has he had permission to? It's the murky world of transfers. I've always said this before, there's no harm in going to get someone from Bayern Munich and just having a go at it. Like, if he's going to cost you 20 odd million quid and you thought he was that good in a year ago when you bought him, when I sold him to Bayern, he's worth kicking the tyres on. He can do, he's versatile. He got that versatility that Steve mentioned before. He can play defensive midfield, he can play attacking midfield, he can do all of the roles. For me, he feels like the third of three, potentially, in terms of the finances of it. I liked him at Ajax. He hasn't really done much. He hasn't played.
He's played the grand total 711 minutes for Bayern.
We just haven't seen one of him.
Yeah.
Whether that means he's crap, Nagelsmann didn't fancy him. I know Tuchel was talking him up the other day, so again, it's all worth, you know, he might have been really pissed off under Nagelsmann and now there's a new manager and all that kind of stuff. But
they're adding Konrad Leimer to it in the summer, so something doesn't fit somewhere.
Someone's got to go, haven't they? Yeah. And listen to people, Jonathan Northcroft, Mel Reddy, David Ornstein. I mean, they're three of the most reputable people, you know, with all due respect to other outlets. They're free. This isn't like some random German blog saying these kind of, you know, like it's proper outlets who have all collaborated the story of Liverpool meeting with his agent. It's interesting that the major German outlets are all getting fed by Bayern. He's not for sale. But, I mean, if he's not for sale, then, you know, someone's fucked up somewhere because a meeting with his agent's got out. So you'd like to hope that there is something behind the scenes that it could be on.
Absolutely. Just a couple from our club legends while we've been doing it. How did David say? And I do wonder how Robbo will hold up as a left centre-back with the inverted system. I think the reality is we will end up getting a right-back and carrying on with four at the back and Trent going into midfield full-time. It's just there's a bunch of centre mids in front of him. Milesy, 20 not to throw yet another Dutch player in the mix, but Dumfries would be a good one to get. Can be attacking also. Right, we'll move on to Forest at the weekend. I'm kind of saying this to people, don't bother looking at the league table because it's still wholly depressing. But we've got Forest and West Ham midweek. And then who's the weekend? Who's the weekend after that?
Spurs, maybe?
Spurs, Brentford all coming up.
Yeah. Well, I'll double check that. But the point is that...
Got a graphic.
We've got a graphic. I'll get that up now.
Tottenham, there you go.
Only two of them... I was going to say only two of them are above us, but Brentford... Not the below us, aren't they? So, whether that's a good thing, one off the Reds, I don't know. They're playing the worst teams.
Yeah, I mean, so what kind of the point is that in this time... 2 weeks from now, you know, we can have a little look and see what it looks like, and that's when we'll have a clearer picture of whether it's like, well, we can get hungry and get excited around a possibility, because I think that's when it's going to start to really hot up. And obviously we can look at the fixtures.
It's interesting, Paul, on that, go back to it, like, where I remember when we done the reaction show to the fixture list and I was like, oh, if Liverpool are in a title race, I really fancy that running if Liverpool are in it. It's the annual get past Spurs in late spring game that we always seem to have. But I was thinking, if Liverpool are back in it, and obviously we're not now, but Liverpool, and me and Chris said this for ages, you can't trust them at the minute. But if Liverpool become a side you can trust, they are 9 winnable games. There's nothing in there that terrifies you. Mm-hmm. You're not going to City, you're not going to Arsenal. You know what I mean? There's nothing there that absolutely puts the shits up you. There's no Derby game, there's no United. It's just whether Liverpool can be. If Liverpool can be what they were last night, and they're all winnable. A 9 out of 9 could get you top 4, it could get you whatever it gets you, but that's the positive. If Liverpool can be Liverpool, then it should be fine.
What, Chris, you did the graphic, what are the highlighted games?
They were top 4 contenders at the time.
Sad.
I've thrown Villa in there now as well. Villa's fixtures really should be there, but like I did this about 10 minutes before the show.
Done a very good job. But the Newcastle one, I think, is the most, one of the interesting ones for me, because right now, I think we'd probably all sit here and say Man United look too far over the hill, gone in third at this point, which is interesting because like a week ago, it was them and they were behind Newcastle and everyone was looking at them as being the victim potentially. Newcastle have got Tottenham at home, Everton away, Southampton at home, Arsenal at home, Leeds away, Leicester home, Chelsea away, and there's a Brighton home game to fit in there somewhere as well. But Chelsea away, last game of the season, is a big one. And what they've got, you would look at Newcastle's, I think, fixture list and take the Arsenal game out of it potentially, and maybe Tottenham in this, but yeah, Everton, yeah, Southampton, yeah, Leeds, yeah, Leicester.
But look, you could highlight all of them for a completely different reason.
Yeah.
They're all relegation zone or just on the edge of it.
They don't have any teams, I think, with the exception of possibly Chelsea, but at the last game of the season, who are that mid-table on the beach. We've got nothing to do, nothing to play for. And Chelsea will have some pride to play for. They'll be at Stamford Bridge for that one as well.
Gus Huddings, Chelsea at that point.
Yeah.
I think it might be Todd Bowley's Chelsea, literally. He's the manager, CEO.
Yeah.
By all accounts.
But I agree with that thing, yeah. Everton, Southampton, Leeds and Leicester, on paper, you're like, well, Newcastle will piss that. But there's four teams who are going to be scrapping for their lives.
Yeah, but people can remember.
They're
shit. Yeah, they are. And they're not like, none of them are giving anyone a bloody nose at the moment. They are just, the dross is miles away from the midfield this season.
You can see that there's a gap starting to emerge. Like the Palace have moved themselves away. And even Bournemouth, like teams that, the teams you would.
Bournemouth moved themselves away by beating us.
Yeah, and Tottenham.
There's
a
chance though that two of those are going to stay up. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, because Southampton.
You know, and they're going to pick up points in order to accomplish that.
It looks like Southampton looked like the dead.
Yeah.
And that's why it's encouraging for us having them away last game of the season, is they'll be done. Sure. You know, it'll be a thank you very much for all the fans. Sorry, a thank you and sorry to all the fans, hopefully.
James Ward-Prowse's goodbye game.
Yeah.
I don't want Newcastle, mate. Brighton would be more than all of them. Mm. I think Brighton are the best team of the four that we just put up there. And Villa. Villa have won five on the spin. Can't rule them out of it
either.
They've
got that FA Cup final. That's all I'm pinning my hopes
on. They've got to get there first, but they should get there.
I meant semi-final.
Semi against United. But they're good. They're fucking good, Brighton.
The new Brighton two games in hand is the real X factor in this, because they're in a bit of a false position.
It's going to be three, isn't it, soon? Because they miss a City game out this because the Cup game.
Exactly. Brighton have got, on paper, probably the hardest fixtures.
Forest away, Wolves at home, Man United at home, Everton at home, Arsenal at home, Southampton Arsenal away, Southampton at home, Villa away, and Newcastle away, City at home so far to fit in.
It's mad how Villa have just become a thing, isn't it? Like, this is, we said this upstairs, like, Villa have won five on the spin, and before you know it, they're 6 points off top four. That's what gives you confidence if you're Liverpool. Yes. Them gaps can close. If Liverpool can win three games, I mean, and you're hoping this weekend, you're hoping that Tottenham either draw with Newcastle or probably beat them, and just keep that. And then all of a sudden, Liverpool are 6 points behind fourth place. Going with our seven games to go. At that point, it starts feeling a bit more realistic.
I'd much rather Tottenham to win that game, because I trust Tottenham to lose more games between now and the end of the season. I think the conventional wisdom is to get a draw.
Tottenham are
just one of those weird teams, aren't they?
It isn't. It's just isn't the flip side. It's not just the point. It's the sheer amount of teams.
Yes.
They've got Spurs and Newcastle. Spurs got to drop points, but then you've also got to get more than Brighton and Villa. That's the worry for Liverpool. But I think 9 out of 9, and I'm sitting there, and again, I go back to it. It gets you 71 points. It's probably going to get you top four.
It's a fucking mess because of how many games haven't been played and the teams that are in there. Because you were in the office before going, Villa are only 6 points behind fourth. Well, they've played a game more than us. If we were to win the game in hand that they've got, we would be in exactly the same position.
Would we
be happily going, Liverpool only 6 points behind fourth? But we've played the same amount of games. It's a fucking mess.
Because United and Brighton have got to the FA Cup semi-finals, and the games that were cancelled have all been games in and around the top four teams. That's why it's all a bit.
And I think
was
one of ours. Fulham was cancelled because of FA Cup and stuff like that. So it's been a mess for a while now. It makes it really difficult, doesn't it?
There's loads of what's going to happen is there's going to be a random Wednesday where someone's playing each, and it impacts us, and I'm not going to know about it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to go on Twitter, and everyone's going to be made up that like Villa have just let an own goal in against like. That's a thing. Yes, that's what it smacks of that.
Your point on Villa's spot on though is like go and win, beat Forest, and then take a breath, and then you play West Ham. Can you beat West Ham? If you can beat West Ham, then all of a sudden you've won three games,
and
then you're going into Tottenham Hotspur with the ability to play a six pointer and really start to claw it in, and that's what you do. It sounds so boring, but it's a game at a time, game at a time, game at a time. If you can get to a situation where you've then won four on the bounce, the Villa factor, that league table is going to look so much more. So much different, so much more tasty, so much more tantalising if we can do that. But it's a big if. But we've been saying this now, the mantra at the moment is about rekindling belief and rekindling excitement and buy-in on the team. And, you know, two good performances back to back. If you win, if we get to the end of the season, if we were to do the nine and win nine back to back, actually what you get to say is what we drew against Arsenal before that as well, and it's very similar to the COVID season where we had a run of it. I think did we win eight and we had 28
out of 30, wasn't it? Yeah,
you know, it was
fourth done, prove me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, finish 50, you can't finish fourth. Like I'm all in on getting the Europa League and time winning that. Like, Liverpool need European footy next season. The idea that they could do without it, for me, is a nonsense. So, and also, like, confidence going into next season, it's hard to, you don't want to crawl into next year where you feel like, fucking hell, we're shit. Right, we won eight out of nine and we had some good performances and we started getting players back fit and all of a sudden we started looking a bit more like us and we found out that Trent might be the best DM in the planet and we figured all these things out. That's what you want to go in full, you know, that's what you want.
Yeah.
You go in full of confidence. You don't want to just limp there, but again, this is all caveated by the huge red thing of they've got to earn our trust. We cannot trust them. Mm. If this was Liverpool of last season, I'd go, they're going to win all them.
Yeah.
And then you're hoping Man City lose a game. But this Liverpool side, you can't trust them because they haven't earned it.
Absolutely.
They haven't earned it.
Well, we'll see, and that's what their mission is. That's what Jürgen's mission is, and if anyone was going to do it, it's going to be them having players fit and back available, having, you know, and that's the top players and even players like Curtis Jones, because it's not just about having 11 lads out on the pitch. It's about us having 16, 17 players taken to the match day squad who are all capable of winning football matches at that kind of level. And does feel like, yeah, as I said, it's nothing more than a gut feeling on my part, because again, the stats do not back this up. But my hope is that, as I kind of said on the shows for the watch along, is eventually your form changes because you something happens and there's an inciting factor. It might just be end of season reset, summer off, summer training. You start fresh for the new season, but it could have started a week ago. But we're not going to know that for another week or two, and maybe not for another month.
Goal goes in against Arsenal, I'd be backing us massively.
Yeah. Small margins and so many variables.
Absolutely. Who's going to be the Alisson Becker header this season? That's what I want to know. Right, cool.
Sixth.
Yeah, to finish in the Conference League.
Conference League, here we come.
Yeah, you get up and put it wide this time.
not to over the bar, I'm going to fucking mould over it.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, everything is sliding doors, isn't it? There's a world where that happens. We get in the Conference League or the Europa League, and then Cueven Keller has like, well, I'll stick around for another season because I'm the Europa League goalie. And those kind of things. Yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, look, we're going to be doing the Biased Football podcast pretty much straight after this live on RedmenPlus.com. We're going to be talking about Aston Villa, talking about Spurs, who are somehow still fifth in the league, which is astounding to me. The relegation fight. Frank Lampard's Chelsea are just as shit, wow, if not shitter. And Arsenal crumbling is the overall headline topic for that show. So come and join us over on RedmenPlus.com to watch that one. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I hope
can you
I will too.
Let people know. Put
use the code BIAS to get it 50% off.
There you go. What's the other for you?
Thanks.
I have it ready just to make sure you have it.
Yeah. If you use the code BIAS, BIASED, on the Club Captain monthly subscription,
you get more than 50% off. You get £3 off.
Holy shit, what are you doing? I'm giving it away?
Yeah, yeah. It's £2 a month for 3 months.
I'm not happy about that. Don't use that code. Just pay full price. Yeah. Okay. We won a game, for fuck's sake.
God, we charged VAT on that as well. Yeah, that's like 166. Yeah, Jesus
Christ. Give it
fucking
them.
Hell.
It's costing us. Right. So.
And then the stripe fees of about 20. It's about £1 to us.
Shocking. Don't use the code BIAS.
Do not use the code BIAS. Just give us a chance to change it.
hopefully we won't see you on a discounted code over on Red Plus Member Plus. We'll see you full price. And do, while you get a chance, grab your tickets for the live show as well, 5th of May. Look, you can get the feel of air of positivity already. We won a game. Imagine if we've won a few and then we're going into the Brentford game and you're having a big party with us at Hotel Anfield, answering quiz questions and winning prizes and doing challenges. Ticket quarter, Liverpool quiz events, Redmen, get involved. Right, that's it from the podcast. See you all soon.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.